and welcome to episode 12 of Bin Weg Bouldern. My name is Juliane Fritz, and in this episode you will hear one of the climbers that I cheer for the most when I watch IFSC competitions, and she's one of the most successful climbers in these competitions. It is Stasha Geo from Serbia. She is just 20 years old, a fact that I almost always forget when I see her. I met her before the World Cup in Munich, and in that competition she was not that lucky and missed the semi-finals. But I think she might have forgotten that by now because of her well-deserved third place in the World Championships in Innsbruck. Bronze for Stasha in bouldering. Second was Akio Noguchi and first was Janja Garnbret. And I think Stasha could not be happier right now and must have been very proud on that podium. I was so happy for her, and I am very proud to present to you my interview with this woman, one of the very best boulderers in the world, and also a very interesting and super nice person to talk to. Have fun with Stasha Geo. Stasha, hi.
Hi.
I'm very happy to meet you for my podcast. And I am very happy because you are one of the international boulderers that I am always very excited to see when I watch a comp. And it's like whenever I watch a comp with my friends and they start chatting about something and I tell them to be quiet when you are climbing because I want to watch you and concentrate, and because somehow I don't know, my feelings are with you.
That's really nice to hear.
Because yeah. I like to see you climbing so much. And well, at first, how do you feel a day before Munich, before the comp?
Yeah, it feels great, actually. I always, when I come to Munich, I feel...
What was that?
My phone. I feel kind of nervous that I want to start just now. I want to climb and I can't wait for the comp. And in Munich, it's always female comp starts in the afternoon. And the morning before the comp is the craziest morning ever because it just feels like forever.
Yeah.
And I just can't wait for the fun to start. Munich is very special to me. It was one of my first best performances in World Cup when I was still a junior. And the crowd just amazes me here every time.
We are in the hotel and there are some people passing by.
Yeah, even though we didn't expect this. And it's really a special comp for me, one of my favorite.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for it. Every year I've been in finals so far every time. And I really hope it will be the same this year. But it's an amazing experience. Just the whole atmosphere puts me in a special climbing mode where I just climb semi-automatically. I don't think so much, and when I don't think, I climb my best. It's kind of a subconscious performance, and I love that.
Yeah, cool. And how do you feel when you know, like, that people like me are with you, are feeling with you? Is that something that you feel when you are at the wall, on the wall?
I do, especially before the competition. I come here to climb in Boulderwelt Ost. And many people approach me and say, hey, are you Stasha? Oh my God, I love your style so much. We're always cheering for you. One guy said, yeah, I've been climbing for 5 months and the first time I come to this gym, I meet you. That's like a great pleasure and so on. I feel really touched when people approach me because everybody has their own reason to cheer for me. And sometimes I really don't understand what they mean by their they love my style, and I just think, what is that so special about my style that they like? And I asked one woman that question.
Say?
She said, well, you're somehow climb really smart and you're devoted to it. You like put emotion in climbing. And one guy said, yeah, you're really funny on the live stream. I said, okay, I didn't know that. It was funny. But yeah, everybody finds something in my performance that they like, and they're with me. And in Munich, I really feel this energy, especially when people tell me that.
Yeah.
And I communicate with them. So it's an overall experience that's really emotional for me and for the spectators. And I think everybody feels that. It's obvious.
Yeah, cool. And what kind of feelings do you let into your head? So you told me, yeah, you feel the people cheering for you, you feel that they are with you, but what are the feelings that you can take with you when you are at the wall, and what kind of feelings do you want to avoid?
I try to awaken feelings of joy and the feelings of excitement about the task that I'm confronting. So if I see some great boulder with a lot of volumes, my first impression would be, wow, I just can't wait to touch these. And usually when I'm under such impression and under adrenaline of the competition, it's not hard to produce wow inside of my head, because everything seems interesting, and when I see a solution to a problem, it excites me. It makes me happy, and I'm more likely to do the boulder. I don't think rationally, I just think through, like I'm searching through my experience of the moves I know, of the past boulders, of the motorical neural connections, and I just see my path through the boulder. And when I see it without any blockages along the way, I'm just, like, that's it, eureka. Yeah. And I'm excited about doing it, and even if I fail, okay, let's find another solution. And as long as I'm in that kind of mode of climbing, it's always going well.
Yeah.
And I try to avoid the hopelessness and giving up the thoughts like, nah, I don't want to do this if I'm not doing well. It happened to me a lot, but I think that I've train myself enough not to experience these.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. I read that the first competition you went to was when you were 8 years old. Are you used to the pressure, and do you have like a routine that helps you with the pressure before you go climbing?
Well, I'm a fighter since the day I was born, and whatever I do, everybody who knows me well knows that I'm very competitive, and I really want to excel in everything I do, otherwise it's not worth the effort. So yeah, since I was a kid, I always wanted to fight, I always wanted to show my best, because I trained well and I was really hardworking, and I still am. So every time I would do a comp, I would try to like bite around, metaphorically spoken. So yeah, not that I'm used to the pressure, I put myself under pressure, but the pressure that I understand as a working pressure, as a succeeding pressure, as a positive pressure. So that's kind of a motivational state that I'm in.
One thing that I read is that there is no climbing team in Serbia.
Well, national climbing team consists of me, my dad, and my mom.
Yeah.
My dad is the team manager, my mom is my therapist, and I'm the competitor. There are some youth competitors that have been going to the youth cups recently, like Nora Bognar, she's from Subotica, it's the north of Serbia, and Nikola Vučković, he's from Belgrade. They're still young and still inexperienced, but they're going to comps, and this is what I respect, and this is what I really like, because that hasn't happened for a long time now.
Yeah.
We used to have some senior climbers going to competitions, but that didn't last long, and I hope that with time that this will change, maybe, because now we're in the process of projecting the new Olympic Center in Belgrade, financed by the government. And I hope that when this center is built, that we will approach training more seriously, that many people will find themselves inside this training routine, and that I will have more motivation if they have better conditions for training. I mean, I have hope. I don't know if others have. My wish is to train those people. I would like to help. But I can't really arrange it with my lifestyle. I can't do everything. I can't compete. I can't study and train others and fight for a team at the same time. It's just not possible. But I have my own priorities. But in somewhere with my mind, I am with them.
What I thought is, Serbia has such a great and very good climber, that you could be a role model for the others. Are you in that position?
Yes, I am a role model. I believe that. And I come to Serbia, to Serbian comps once or twice a year, and every time kids look at me like I'm a saint, and I don't know if I like that, but that's the kids' way of expressing they're admiring me and my climbing mm-hmm. and my results, and it's really nice. But first of all, I would need to make a personal connection with kids to let them know me better, that I'm not a saint, but I'm just a hardworking kid that just wants to achieve really big things.
Yeah.
And I'd like to evoke this passion in them, because that's the first thing to success. You just need to be devoted and you must not give up no matter what. And even though there are successes and failures, you just have to go through the path and until you achieve your goals and you set intermediary goals. And yeah, just some kids and some parents don't understand the process. Mm-hmm. And that's why we don't have internationally successful climbers, because they give up way too early.
Uh-huh.
That's not a thing that I can actually change, because parents are parents and I'm just a person outside of that circle.
Okay. And how do they talk to you, the people in Serbia, when you say that they see you like a saint?
They don't say that, but I see the kids, how they look at me, and sometimes usually I feel really embarrassed by that, because I don't want them to see me that way, because they're training in a club where I grew up, on the wall that I grew up on, in a club which is guided by my parents. And I know those kids since they came to the club, but we don't see each other very often. And then some of them that I've known for 4 years are ashamed of talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a thing that I like. But yeah, as I said, I'm not there, so I can't really change that. They the way they look at me says it all. They don't need to speak to me for me to notice how they feel.
Well, they can speak to you. Yeah. So you already said that your teachers, your trainers, were your parents. Can you tell me how you grew up as a climbing child with your parents?
Well, the very beginning was that I didn't have any other activity to do. I mean, I know that I didn't have, but my parents had this job and they had a team, and my sister was also climbing at that time. So that was a full-time activity, just climbing, training others, climbing by themselves, traveling to comps, traveling to outdoor climbing. And guess what? I went with them. So because I was a kid and there was nobody really to babysit me besides my grandmother, but they didn't want to just put me in my grandmother's all the time. So yeah, I was playing with equipment. I was a kid that always wanted to do everything. So I said, I want to climb. And yeah, I was climbing. I had periods where I was afraid of heights, periods where I didn't want to climb. I wanted to play with kids. And my parents said just, well, yeah, okay. And then one of a sudden something clicks again, and then I want to climb again.
Yeah.
They drove me to comps alongside other kids that were competing at the time. So that's when I gained my first experiences in competition climbing. Yes, when I was 8 years old in Bulgaria. And step by step, it just became a lifestyle. I don't know. I was in competitions forever since I know for myself. And it just became stronger, this bond with competition performance and hard work on training and school. And it became a routine, basically.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you said that you also know the fear that a climber could have, because I thought, when you grow up with climbing, that you don't have this fear, because sometimes I see children at the bouldering gym and they climb really high and they don't seem to be afraid. And I thought maybe you get used to it when you start.
Yeah, you do get used to it, actually, yes. But I do have fear. For example, my first biggest fear now is deep water solo.
Uh-huh.
And in general, jumping into water. Doesn't have to be rocks, just the presence of water and something unknown below the surface is really scary. And I know that it can be really painful if you fall in the wrong way and you can hurt yourself and so on. So I'm really afraid. I mean, I don't say this because, I don't know, it's a fear. It's really a fear. And I have fear of heights when I'm not secure with rope. if I'm on a cliff or something, I'm really scared.
Yeah.
And it is real. Also, I had fear of multi-pitches when I was unknotting and knotting inside.
Yeah.
It's really a fear when you feel that if you do something wrong, you can really end up on a bad place.
Yeah.
So, but I think with routine and repetition and practice, you overcome the fear. So if I would now go and practice deep water soloing, I would definitely get over the fear. And the same thing is with climbing, and the same thing is with falling.
Yeah.
If you're 2 meters above the last bolt, you just fall and once, twice, three times, 10 times, and then you just get used to it.
Yeah.
You get used to it. And I noticed actually this process when I was climbing outdoors. When I was a kid, I had a terrible fear of falling. And I noticed when I started doing competition climbing, you forget about clipping, about the bolts and how far you're going to fall. Because you're just so much into climbing, you focus on climbing, you don't focus on where the bolt is.
Yeah.
When I noticed this, how I've overcome this fear, it seemed really funny to me because I used to calculate how much, where is the bolt, oh my God, how much rope I have, how much my mother will give me the slack, the stretch of the rope, and yeah, I'm on the ground. I mean, I'm joking, but that's how everybody feels when they are afraid of falling.
Yeah.
You just don't. You just freeze. You forget about climbing, and the only thing is in your mind is the last bolt.
Yeah,
but you just get focused on something else. You practice, and you get over it. It's really simple in the end.
Is it a goal for you to really practice deep water solo climbing?
No, it doesn't motivate me that much, so it's not really a goal.
Okay,
but I do feel ashamed of myself when I'm afraid to jump. But okay. Leave it aside.
You don't need to be ashamed. About your parents again, besides showing you how to climb, what would you say is also like a gift that your parents gave you that helped you to become a pro athlete?
The working routine.
Yeah.
Then using the potential, because they never let me give up. They didn't force me into doing climbing. They just forced me not to give up. Because, and that's really good, actually, you realize that when you grow up. Many parents don't do this nowadays. They just spoil their kids and they say, no, you don't need to do this, it's okay, you can do something else. But this is actually the crucial moment of the future.
Yeah.
Because if they let you give up, you're not going to become anything. If you don't give up, you're going to be something.
Yeah.
In the future. So this is the main thing, the discipline they somehow brought me up with. By building these skills, I would say there are skills actually, they helped me become successful and determined to what I do.
Yeah. You also said that there were these moments when you did not want to train. I could imagine that these moments you had when you were a teenager.
No. I was 5 years old, actually, six.
Ah.
I didn't want to climb. I was afraid of heights and so on, but I got through it somehow. I don't remember really. At that time, it was just a game, basically.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. But when you look through life of an athlete, a serious athlete, I think almost every week there is a thought, at least one thought, why am I doing this? Like, why the hell did I do this to myself? I could live a normal life. And everybody says that.
Yeah.
But it's a thought. It is just natural to us. It's an inner voice, inner devil that says, just give up. But you know that you're not going to do it, so you just...
I should not do it.
Yeah.
You're too good. My thought was about this teenager time. As a teenager, maybe you thought, okay, I want to just join the other people at my age and do what they do and not travel so much and stuff like that. Was there a thought like that?
Yeah, in late teenage years. But I don't know. It was really more connected to my relations in between climbing and studying, because I was always comparing to the kids that don't do anything and they just study. And when I'm away and I have to study for an exam and I do worse than others do, because again, I'm very competitive and I have to be the best and I have to have perfect grades and so on. But when I don't do as well, because I was limited in time and concentration, then I blame myself because it's, yeah, I'm climbing and they're not doing anything. They're better just because they have so much time. I should quit this and quit that and blah, blah, blah. And it's just that short time complaining. But I'm really thankful for what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. So I quickly forget about everything that I have to complain about.
Okay, good. What was it like to grow up with, I guess there were not so many people that were climbing at your level in Serbia. What was that like?
It was weird because on the national level in my group, in my category, there was not such a big competition. And when I was already 12, I started competing with the seniors because I had no other way to progress other than just go level up. And the National Federation allowed me to compete. First, it was like an absolute category, so my results wouldn't count. But still, I was allowed to do all the comps that seniors did. And step by step, year by year, I think in 2 or 3 years, I was already on the podium. And then at that time, I was competing with my mother. Yeah, that's when I started. I remember that comp. And slowly after that, my mother stopped competing. I don't know if it was because of me or just because she didn't have any more motivation to do competitions. But yeah, we were competing against each other. Ah. That was a long, long time ago. I think it was 2 or 3 competitions. But yeah, step by step, I climbed onto the first place and I stayed there for a long time. Many kids then came later on in this group and left, and the seniors that stopped competing started to compete again. It was really a competition. But then I overcame this level as well. So we started traveling to Austria and to Slovenia, and I competed in the National League. I paid licenses in 3 different countries so I could just have competition and learn from others and also learn about myself, what I possess and what I don't and what I have yet to earn. And it's a long process. The whole my competition career was just a step-by-step process. Year by year, I was getting better and better. And in the end of some cycle, I would reach the first place. And it was always like that, always the last year of some age group. I would be first in the end.
Yeah.
When I was competing in U14, under-14 cups, in the last year, I won everything.
Yeah.
The year before that, I won something. also, when I was in youth comps, when I was junior, last year of juniors, I literally won everything. In the European scene, I won the world championship a year before that. So I think it's somehow stage by stage process in my career. And I feel that also in the senior stage. Year by year, I'm climbing better and better. Also, the competition is, but I can see the progress, and I think everybody can. And it's good because I have a steady inclination line in the performance. So I like that. I like that, and I think it's healthy.
Yeah, that's good. Do you remember any moments when you grew up or when you were a teenager that made you realize that you could actually be very good on an international level?
The thing is, as one man said a few weeks ago, she's never happy. I laughed so much on this. When I was standing on the podium in Arco, she's never happy. Yeah, I don't look happy sometimes. I value my my fortunes afterwards when I have time to think about them and so on. But there was never a moment, I think, where I said, oh my God, like light shone and that the path showed to me, oh, this is where I'm going to go. No, it was just the regular lifestyle, because it was logical for me to do it that way. My parents actually saw this when I was 10 years old, when I got my first medal on an international competition in Bulgaria, when I was second in a group with a wide span of years. So the girl that won was Russian. She was 2 or 3 years older than me. And that was the moment when they saw that they should travel a lot with me and let me learn from others from all over the Europe. That's when our journey started. And by this process, they showed me where I'm going, where and what I'm able to do.
So they are more happy for you than you sometimes look.
Yes, actually, that's very true.
Okay.
No, I really appreciate what I've done. And I am happy. I'm happy, but I sometimes don't know how to show it. Okay. And I'm too critical about myself. That's why it's coming in the way.
But I understand that.
Yeah. That's the downside to being devoted to something.
Yeah. One funny thing about you is that also, as I'm talking to you now, you seem older than you actually are.
And, I've heard that.
Yeah. I don't know, did you somehow grow up faster because of this special kind of life that you live?
Maybe. I just don't know an answer to this question. Yeah, I've heard this. Yeah, you act older than you are and so on. I don't know. I didn't really intend to ever.
Okay.
That's just the way I am, I guess. I don't know. The lifestyle of traveling, different cultures, different routines, discipline, maybe, I guess.
Might be true. I want to go back to the fact that you grew up in Serbia and that you now live in Slovenia.
Yeah, for 4 years now.
Yeah. Is that because you have better training gyms there, because in Serbia the scene is not that huge?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons. Actually, I've moved to Slovenia for two reasons. First one was education. I attended one of the best schooling programs for high school, the International Baccalaureate, for third and fourth year, the diploma program, and I'm really thankful for it. It was one of the best decisions of my life, actually, for education. And as well, because many good training centers are around the town I live in, Maribor. So it was a win-win, I guess. And I've been there for 4 years now, and it played out really well.
What do you study?
Electrical power engineering.
Ah, something completely different.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed maths and physics and technology, so a mixture that seemed really nice to me, and I do enjoy it a lot. And I put a lot of my time in it. And now that I'm on vacation, since I finished all my exams in time and in the first exam period, now I'm already bored and I'm looking for something to do. And I still have time until October. And I don't know what to do, because without guidance and without professors, it's really hard to do something by yourself. But I think I have to find a way to entertain myself, because it's really hard to kill boredom when you're traveling, when you're in competitions. Like today and yesterday, I have rest days. There's nothing to do. I watch series. I like a medical series. That's my hobby. I watch the whole Grey's Anatomy.
Cool.
The whole Good Doctor. Now I'm watching House again. And it's really hard to entertain yourself when you're away. And I've spoken about this with the German physio, with Chris, and he said it's really a problem.
Yeah.
For athletes to kill the boredom. When we were in China, it was crazy. I mean, okay, at that time I had something to do. My colleague sent me notes from university, tasks and so on, so I was schooling online.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine for some people that are not studying, what are they doing in their free time? I'm thinking about Innsbruck, that's in September, for 10 days, World Championships. And the schedule is not so tight, so you have basically three quarters of the day not competing. I have no idea. I'll watch all the series by then.
You should start listening to podcasts.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I should. Yeah, that's a good idea.
But then there's always your hands left.
Do math exercise.
You have to do something with your hands.
I lost concentration for reading. I used to read a lot lately. But now I just can't focus. If it's not really, really interesting, I'm not spending my time reading. So, yeah.
It's funny, because it's like you need a third big passion in your life that could help you in these moments. Like when you can't climb and can't study, you need to do something else.
Yeah, I used to play music. I used to play viola. I went to music school and I finished 2 years of high school, but then I moved to Slovenia, so I had to stop schooling. And I played in a school orchestra for another 2 years. But since I started uni, I didn't have any time left for playing it. So it's basically collecting dust in my room. But maybe I should return to it. That's a third passion.
Okay, cool. Do you actually train with the Slovenian athletes when you're
not there? Not anymore. Not we used to, but the circumstances have changed. So I train with some of my friends.
Yeah.
Some of them, actually one girl is from the youth team. She's in the same town as I am, Urška. Mm-hmm. She has just become a worldwide champion in juniors in bouldering, and I'm really proud of her.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah, we sometimes train together. But I travel a lot and I have friends in different towns, so I combine.
Okay. What do you think would your life look like? Okay, I don't know if you really like to think about that, but after the pro athlete phase in your life, are you thinking about that?
Yes, actually really often. And I'm just deciding when it's going to happen. But I'm not going to say anything more about that. But
no,
what it's going to look like, well, yeah, I'll definitely be doing something in electrical engineering.
Yeah.
That's a great passion. I'm still deciding if I should be working as a project manager in some firm, or should I be doing a PhD later on and do research or work in university or teach and so on. I'm still deciding on that. But yeah, I love this and I can't wait to start actually working and doing something else than climbing and make it my primary profession.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I'm really looking forward to it and I'm trying to imagine what it's going to look like. But I want to make it challenging as well because I love challenges.
I'm curious because you also said that you would like to train people in Serbia. Isn't that something you would like to do?
Yes, that is also true. But I still have to decide how it's going to look. I don't know. It's a hard choice. And
I guess there needs to be a little bit more development in the climbing scene there.
Yeah, but since I want to build my career in engineering, I don't know how this training would go on with it. Maybe when I finish with electrical engineering part of life, maybe then I'll turn to training others.
Okay. Something that you are also good at is commentating World Cups. I don't remember which cup it was, but you were the co-commentator there.
Yeah, I did the Arco Kranje.
Paris. And you were really good at it.
Yeah, as you can notice, I speak a lot. I really like to express myself, and I believe it's more interesting to watch a competition while you can express your thoughts and your impressions about somebody's climbing.
Yeah.
That's why I like doing it, and I'm always available for commentating. It's fun because you can share thoughts with a co-commentator, and then you get asked some questions from people that are listening to you. It's better than just watching it by yourself and keeping your thoughts for yourself.
Mm. When I saw you doing that, I thought again that there are unfortunately not so many women in the scene, women climbing, but also women working around the World Cups and climbing. And it just feels good to hear a female voice there. Is that something that you feel too? Something that you realize sometimes, oh, why are there so many male route setters and something like that?
I actually don't focus that much on that. Some people are making it really a big deal out of that, having now two female official route setters. I wouldn't make a fuss out of it. It's just that, I don't know, either females are not motivated enough or they feel like they're in a lower position than men. But if you fight enough, if you show what you can do, of course you can get a position. I don't think it would be that hard to get a position in an official competition to be a route setter.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. I think that also other females have been commentating, like Alana Yip from Canada. It's just that it's hard to find, for the commentators, for Charlie, it's hard to find good English speakers that are willing to commentate because people are ashamed of their English and they don't want to speak because they think that I can't speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it turns out that more females are not keen to co-commentate.
Yeah.
He has offered this to many females. Okay. I know that. They just don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that usually Campbell Harrison from Australia is commentating because he's also talkative as well as I am. And he's native English speaker. So, yeah, great match.
Yeah.
So that's how it goes. You know, it's... I don't think women, let's say, fight. It's not really a fight, but they don't want the position or exposition enough.
Okay.
And then people get impression, yeah, there are not many females there. There are, they just don't want to do it.
Well, actually, it's good that you are not commentating so much because it means that you are still in the comp.
That's what I read some comments about that on the live stream. They said, yeah, some people say, yeah, I wish you would always co-commentate. And then a reply, shut up, that means she'll never be in finals again. Good point,
no,
though.
You
yeah.
should be in the finals because everyone who saw you climbing knows how good you are, and you are always in the top positions. And how much do you really want to be in the first place, finally, in a bouldering world club?
As I said, step by step. I have a lot to learn. I have a lot of space to progress. Again, I'm never happy. Yeah, I'm never satisfied with my current state. But I can see that, and I feel optimistic about that, because if there is space to progress, we should always embrace that opportunity and just stay disciplined and hardworking.
Mm. And at your level, can you say what specifically do you need to train to become better?
Yeah, you have to train. If you, especially for females, it's a very speculative area of gaining strength.
Mm-hmm.
Because for men, it doesn't seem so hard to be strong. And they're a lot stronger than females. Of course, genetic predisposition of male hormones, of course. If a woman has this opportunity to become stronger, it's a really good thing to do it. Mm-hmm. Because power is really crucial sometimes. And it's sometimes a really important factor that decides a competition if you're strong or not.
Yeah.
You can have all the other skills you want. If you're not strong, bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
But if you reach a certain level of power that you can't gain anymore, you have to look outside the box and embrace other skills. It's like Akio Noguchi finally started jumping and doing coordinative skills, mm-hmm. and now she's better than ever.
Yeah.
Just because she changed something in her training, she opened her mind for new elements, for new way of perceiving climbing. And that's when she gained confidence, when mm-hmm. she gained new skills, she gained confidence in those skills. And now you can't really even reach her.
Yeah.
That's it. You just have to explore. Everybody's different. Everybody has their own strengths and weaknesses. So you, by training and by competing, you explore and you see what you're good at and you see what you lack. And then you see what others did, combine it what you can do, and then you see what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
You're building yourself. You're not... Everybody's different. Everybody's shape of the body is different. Not anybody yeah. can be skinny and then just cruise through some boulders or roots because they weight so minimally that they yeah. can actually pull themselves up. Some of us, I can really put myself amongst the bigger girls.
Yeah.
You have to work on your other skills. You have to be more powerful. You have to just embrace what you are, what you look like, what you can do and who you are, and then build on that things.
So you would say more power is more the power, thing you have to get.
More dynamics, yeah. more endurance, power endurance, so you can hold on for a longer time. You need to build on work on your recovery. For example, Janja, she has the best recovery I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what makes her one of the best,
mm-hmm.
because she used this strength to work more. She can work more because she can recover faster.
Yeah.
That's a big, big, big plus. And then on competition, she doesn't get tired.
Yeah.
So she can beat anybody because she's just fresh. Every time you look at her, I've rarely seen her out of energy.
Yeah.
I mean, now that we haven't climbed together for a while, maybe it does happen. It has to happen, of course, if you're training on this level.
Mm.
But in comparison to me, for example, she's just superhuman. You know,
that's true.
that's really true. And this is just this element. It doesn't seem so important, but it actually is. The way you recover is also connected to how well trained you are. Mm-hmm. If you don't have this superhuman ability to recover by yourself biologically, you have to build it. You have to put your body under some maybe extreme conditions of training so you can lift your level of recovery. You know, it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
Of course, nutrition. Somebody eats one way, others eat the other way. And it's really a personal thing, what you do and what you build on.
Now that you say nutrition, that's interesting. Do you do something special?
Yeah, I'm always doing something special, but it's always different. And I'm always experimenting now for, I think, 4 years. I'm experimenting with the nutrition, and I had some certain consults. With me, it's weird because something works for one period of time and then it stops working.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just pulls me out of the way. And then I have to change something again. And again, it works for even shorter period of time. Mm-hmm. And then I go back.
So you can make no recommendations?
No, I can't. Just people figure it out by yourself. It's hard for me to. It's one of the biggest enigmas in my life.
Uh-huh.
Don't ask me that.
Okay. But one important future question is, are the Olympic Games in Japan a goal for you?
Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Okay.
I've competed in several elite World Cups this year, and my best placement was 12th. It never happened before. It was in Arco. And I was really, really excited about that. I'm working on speed. I broke my personal best in Chamonix, so now I'm on 10:32 and I still have to practice it. There's a lot of progress to be done, and I believe I can do it.
Yeah.
And it's just the question of schedule and the question of climbing gyms, mm-hmm. and the time you have, and of course recovery. It's most important. So you have to make your muscles be able to comprehend and absorb all the training that you've done. So if you do too much, you're just wasting your energy for nothing. If your muscles and neurons don't sort out like they should after the training, it's a hard task to do, to prepare for the Olympics, but it's doable. And I'm really looking forward to it.
That's cool that you do it, but... is it hard to train in another area of climbing? Does that mean that you like get worse in like bouldering or?
But yeah, it does if you just focus on that other discipline.
Yeah.
If you don't, if you do everything on a weekly basis, sometimes disciplines can complement to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Speed, especially, you get a lot more dynamic. You get a lot of power in your arms and legs. It's really good for bouldering.
Yeah.
And lead climbing, for example, endurance or static strength, it also complements to bouldering. But if you're a lead climber, I think it's a lot harder to get to do spin and boulder if you're not that dynamic, if you haven't developed these complex climbing skills that you do in bouldering. But it's totally different muscle fibers.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if we would say, okay, what you have to train to get better in boulder, you get certain... group of exercises, and then you sort another group of exercises that's good for speed and another that's good for lead. You can see that it's totally different exercises.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really make any connections between. It's like doing three different sports.
So can you tell me what kind of exercises are the ones you're talking about?
For speed, you need to get your muscles work faster to make the compressions quick. So you got to do something fast, sprinting fast, performing basic exercises fast to make your whole body work like in a part of a second. When you send this neural signal that you want to jump now, you have to jump as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do a push-up or pull-up, you have to do it just in a tiny part of the second.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you develop it. And of course, power, explosivity, and so on, sprints, etc. For bouldering, it's a whole different set of things, from inner stabilizations of core to maximum power, I don't know, weight trainings, fitness, and so on. But again, it's totally different that you would do for lead, and you have to combine everything if you want to do everything.
Yeah,
it's a hard task. You have to be a multi-skilled person, climber, warrior to do all of that and to be really, really, really good at that. But again, I think recovery is the key, and actually, that's always been my goal, to to always wake up ready for next challenge and to do it maximally.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's hard. It's really, really, really hard.
So now let's focus on Munich. But the time the podcast will be online, Munich will be over. But let's talk about it now. What's your personal goal?
To climb as best as I can. That's my goal.
Okay, perfect. Then I wish you all the best. I hope you will be happy.
Yeah, me too. That's my goal. Be happy and satisfied after a comp. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
And I will be with you.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks for the interview.
Thank you.
That was my interview with Stasha Gejo. I really loved talking to her, finding out more about her life and about her opinion about the other people in the climbing scene. And if you want to find out more about Stasha now, and if you want to see her climb, I will put some links and videos into the show notes. So have fun with that. And in the end, I have a wish. If you like this episode, if you like this podcast, follow me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, leave a comment, share an episode that you like with your friends, or write a rating or a review on iTunes or Facebook. All of this helps me very much with my podcast, so thank you for listening. And by the way, while I am speaking, I am in the beautiful Fontainebleau spending a bouldering week here. And of course, I have already recorded some new stuff for my podcast, and I will go on recording the next days here. You will find out more about that on Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. So hear you soon. Have fun bouldering. Juliane mein Name und ich bin weg bouldern.